This is Virginia Insights. I'm Tom Graham. It could be they're so sleep-deprived it took a while for them to dial our number, but during Dr. Winter's previous visits, the vast majority of advice seekers waited until the final few minutes, and by then, of course, our phone lines were jammed. It's understandable. Lots of people want advice. Problems with sleep are something millions experience. Our guest spent years researching the problem, heads up two different sleep treatment centers, and advises major corporations and national sports teams. So the chance to ask a question or even share a sleep disorder story is something you may not want to pass up. But no matter how tired you are, please don't wait too long to start dialing in. We'd hate for you to be so late that we miss your call. On this live version of the broadcast, Monday, February 4th, neurologist Chris Winter has agreed to address as many sleep-related calls as possible at 888-WMRA-TALK, beginning right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Sleep! If you've got a question about it, we want to hear from you this hour at 888-WMRA-TALK. No, that was not a command. It was a headline for what we're talking about. How to tell if you are getting enough sleep? What can you do if you're not? If you have problems with fatigue, is it because you are not getting enough sleep, not getting the right kind of sleep, or something else? Just some of the issues we'll be asking today's guest to address, but if you have a sleep-related concern that is even more personal to you, do give us a call at 888-967-2825. Our guest is a neurologist who both researches and treats sleep disorders. He's director of the Martha Jefferson Sleep Medicine Center, as well as founder and president of Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine, Dr. Chris Winter. Great to have you back in the Insight Studios.
It is great to be back. I'm very excited for my third go-around.
So, Chris, how can someone tell if they are getting the right kind of sleep?
The right kind of sleep, the right amount of sleep. I think that the way I would answer that question is, how does an individual feel during the day? So I think that to not be wishy-washy about the question, it really boils down to, when you wake up and start your day and you go about your daily activities, you interact with your family, you go to your job, how do you feel? Is it easy for you to stay awake doing mundane activities? Do you feel energetic? Do you feel like your mental capacities are hitting on all cylinders? If the answer to these questions are positive, then I think you're probably getting the right kind of and the right amount of sleep. I think that individuals can do very well on small amounts of sleep. Individuals can do very well on, some individuals need more sleep. I saw a patient today who I really think her biggest problem was she's trying to get too much sleep. She feels like, well, if 7 hours is good, then 8 hours is better, and 9 hours would be even better than that. And at some point, your body tends to send signals that it's got enough. So if an individual is sitting quietly reading a boring report at work or potentially comfortably relaxed and listening to me talk right now and they're having no trouble staying awake and no trouble following along what we're saying, then you're probably doing just fine.
And I think there is a difference between the right amount of sleep and the right kind of sleep. At least that's what Lauren, our first Facebook poster, seems to be hinting at with this question. She says, I have a good friend who snores like a freight train. When a group of us were traveling, we could hear her from down the hall with her hotel room door closed. She knows she snores, but says it's not that bad and does not disturb her sleep. Is that possible? Is she the kind of person who should get a sleep study done to see if apnea is a factor?
That's a great question. And it's an interesting topic. The first question I have to raise is, and I've always wondered, is do freight trains make more noise than passenger trains or other types of trains? So we're living in a community that's heavily railroad based. So if anybody has asked that question, I'd love for somebody to post it, because everybody always snores like a freight train, never a commuter train or something like that. Anyway, seriously, you can snore and have it not affect your sleep. So we call those individuals primary snorers, meaning that they're people you don't want to share a tent with. However, there's nothing about their sleep or their breathing that's necessarily harmful. However, there is this very unusual entity we refer to as upper airway resistance syndrome, UARS. And to be honest with you, the sleep community is not exactly sure what to do with it. These are individuals, and they're frankly often women, who snore very loudly and have subtle breathing disturbances during the night that don't rise to the level of sleep apnea. So you've got this individual who doesn't have an apnea, and we define an apnea as being a 10-second breathing problem that your oxygen drops a certain amount. Well, maybe you're only having 6-second breathing problems, but they're disturbing the quality of your sleep, and you snore. What do you do with this person? And to be honest with you, we're not exactly sure. Some of these people respond very well to treatments with CPAP or other types of treatments for sleep apnea, and other people don't. So I would say to the Facebook poster, it's a great question, and I would say she should talk about her snoring with her primary care doctor or a sleep doctor. But if she's saying, look, I sleep well, I have no difficulty with my energy during the day, I feel great, I'm healthy, I'm not overweight, I'm not hypertensive, then she very well may be somebody who just you want to pay a little extra and get a separate hotel room from her the next time you travel with her.
Neurologist and sleep medicine specialist Chris Winter is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. You can reach us by phone at 888-WMRA. Talk next to Edinburgh. Jim, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
I'm wondering if the doctor knows of any people who never sleep. I saw yesterday where the sleeping illness, a lot of people in Africa have it. They get bit by a mosquito. They don't ever sleep. And I myself didn't sleep for 3 years with the exception of 2 nights. And I'm wondering if we're confusing sleeping with resting, resting being required but sleep not.
Thank you for the call, Jim. Actually, you might have it backwards. There's a couple things about what you're saying, and everybody's got access to Wikipedia, can look this up. There are two different conditions. What you're describing is African sleeping sickness, which is a condition that happens after being bit by the tsetse fly. That is not the same as familial fatal insomnia. And that second F, fatal, is important because Jim said something about rest being required, sleep not. Sleep is absolutely required. And I am not aware of anybody who doesn't sleep and lives to tell about it. I am, however, aware of many people, and I can add one to that list, of people who think they don't sleep. So the nice thing about what I do as a sleep doctor, which is quite easy at its core, is deal with a biological certainty, and that biological certainty is sleep. So if you look at the experiments of sleep deprivation that were done way back when, I think the longest anybody ever stayed awake was this guy, this poor sap at Stanford University, who was in their lab, and they artificially kept him up for somewhere on the order of 11 to 13 days. I can't remember exactly what it is. For some reason, I can never commit that to memory. But the guy was basically hallucinating by the end of it. It was almost impossible to keep him from having what we call micro sleep. So the individuals who I see who feel like they don't sleep, and Jim may be one of them who feels like he went 3 years and only slept a day or two, these individuals are sleeping. They're just not aware of their sleeping. So sleep and lack of perception of sleep are two different things. But I can assure you, Jim, you would not be calling me today, and I really appreciate your call because I think what you're bringing up is very important, a lot of these topics. You would not be calling me if you hadn't slept for 3 years. It's not possible. So that's one of the advantages we have as a sleep doctors. We know that an individual comes into our office is they're sleeping. They may not be sleeping well. They may have lots of problems with their sleep, but they are sleeping. Just like I know they're eating and they are drinking. These are three biological necessities that you can't sidestep.
Jim, thanks so much for your call. And Chris Winter, neurologist, clarifying a couple of things. African sleeping sickness is actually a disease that causes people to sleep almost all the time as opposed
Correct.
To stay awake all
right,
the time.
Right, right, right.
And you can tell, although I have heard lots of patients who come to you saying, I just haven't gotten any sleep for weeks now. When you put them in a sleep study and you monitor what's going on with them overnight, you find that they are sleeping a fair amount. They're just not aware of it.
Absolutely. We saw one, literally, my patient this morning. was in the bed for somewhere on the order of 7 hours and 40 minutes. She slept 5 hours and 39 minutes. And as per my, I'm going to release my one of my secrets here, so don't tell anybody if you hear me. It was one of the questions I always ask after a sleep study was, how was your night? You know, was the technologist nice to you? And the technologists at the Martha Jefferson Sleep Center are always nice to patients, so we always get positive feedback there. But the question is, I always ask is, how did you sleep? And it's amazing how many people tell you that they didn't. And this woman said very clearly, I didn't sleep the night of the study. I'm really upset about that because now we have to repeat it, right? I said, you know what? You actually slept over 5 hours. And one of the patients I said that to when I first started working as the director of the Martha Jefferson Sleep Medicine Center, she actually was so upset by it. And I actually showed her video of her sleeping. And she looked at her husband, and she looked at me, and she said, I knew he was too young to be a doctor. And she walked out, and I never saw her again. So if you were listening, I hope you found a doctor who looks the part and was able to help you, because I was really concerned when she walked out. And the husband gave me this sort of helpless look as he walked out, like, I know she's crazy, but I want her to get her help, but I can't talk to her about it. And so I really felt like the husband was really torn between what he felt like he should do and what he was able to do. And so
if you're really committed to the idea that you don't sleep, I guess videos and charts.
It didn't matter. And it was so interesting to watch her. It's very interesting to watch people who have a bit more self-awareness than this woman. You know, they will tell you, like, I had one woman tell me, Dr. Winter, it's like looking at a video of me robbing a bank. It's that foreign. Like, I cannot believe that is me snoring right there, because my perception of what happened that night was that I basically had my eyes open and I looked at the ceiling all night long. And if you think about it, you know, if I told a listener right now, look, I want you to find a chair in a room with nothing going on, and I want you to sit there for the next 8 hours, and I'll tell you what to do. So you would find it very difficult for somebody to do that. Yet people who tell you that they don't sleep, they feel like they're sitting there for 8 hours all night long. But if they really think about it, do you really feel like 8 hours passed? Most of the time they'll tell you no. They feel the sense of time passing, which is very unusual for sleep. I mean, we should get in bed, fall asleep, and the next thing you know, we're waking up and the alarm clock's going off. But, you know, some people do feel that sense of marching through the night, and it's not particularly pleasant. But my guess is inside there, you're sleeping a little bit.
All of our lines are busy, so if you're trying to reach us, please be patient. We'll free up some lines in a moment. If you're just joining us, Dr. Chris Winter is going to be with us throughout the hour, and the phone number is 888-967-2825 as we dive deep into the topic of sleep. Diving next into the community of Madison, Laura, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hi, I am a light sleeper who has experienced difficulty sleeping through the night for years, over 20 years since I started nursing my babies, of course, had to be up at that time. But, you know, now they're grown, but I'm still experiencing sleep problems because my husband wakes up around 3 a.m. to get ready for work. And being a light sleeper, I'm having difficulty with this. Do you have any advice?
Yeah, that's tough. Light sleep, deep sleep tends to be thrown around a lot. There are often changes that occur, particularly in women, around the time of menopause, around the time of childbirth. The first question, Laura, I would ask you is, what's your schedule like? So, you know, what time are you going to bed, and what time are you falling asleep? Sometimes there are two different things. Well, I fall asleep watching TV at 8 o'clock, but I don't go to bed until 11. So, you know, for somebody who is a quote-unquote light sleeper, that can often indicate, to some degree, you're spending a little bit too much time in bed. And the joke I always make with patients who are light sleepers in my clinic is, my guess is if you joined the military, it would take care of your light sleeping very quickly, in terms of you're not put into the bed until midnight. They drag you out at 5:30 in the morning. I'm not a military person. This is my movie-based guess of what's happening. They run you around. They don't let you take naps. And then when you go to bed at night, you're so sleepy that you sleep more deeply. So schedule would be one thing. And I don't think it's unfair to say, if your husband's waking you up, sleeping apart from him, even once a week. My wife calls those sleepcations, kind of vacations, you know, where you basically say, look, Tuesday night, honey, you're in the guest room, I get the full bed, and I don't have to wake up at 3 o'clock when you wake up.
Laura, we're going to hit the break here in a sec. Can you hang on? Because I want to give you a chance to follow up.
Sure, thank you.
We'll be back in just a bit less than 2 minutes here as we continue. It's sleep on Virginia Insight.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over.
I think the Cordettes may have been talking about a different kind of dreaming than we're addressing on this edition of Virginia Insight. But if you've got a question about dreams of any kind, you're welcome to join the conversation at 888-WMRA-TALK. Charlottesville-based sleep treatment specialist Dr. Chris Winter, our guest, still on the phone line with us. Light sleeper Laura from Madison. Did you have a follow-up to what Chris was telling you just a few moments ago?
As a matter of fact, I do. And it is, recently I've heard the term sleep hygiene. Could you explain what that is?
Sure. Sleep hygiene is basically controlling what you can about your sleep. So you want to make sure your room is dark. You want to make sure the clothes you're wearing are comfortable to you, even if they're not as appealing to your husband as he would like. So it's always important. It's all about the sleeper, right? So you want to make sure that your bedroom is comfortable. The light is minimized. All these things sort of constitute sleep hygiene. And I would say that sleep hygiene is important, but it's not everything when it comes to sleep. You know, a lot of people get frustrated when they maximize everything about their sleep environment, but it doesn't make their sleep positive. So if your sleep hygiene is good, you're not going to bed too early, Laura. You are taking a break away from your husband. Doesn't mean you don't love him. It just means that, you know, you want to get up at 6 and you don't want to get up at 3. Because it is, you know, when you wake up at 3 o'clock, even if you have the opportunity to go back to sleep, you're not as driven to go to sleep at 3 o'clock as you were when you went to bed at 11 o'clock at night. I mean, you have slept some. So, and it also sort of conditions you to wake up. You know, a lot of women who have new babies will tell you, look, my baby's sleeping through the night, but I continue to wake up at the times I would have typically nursed him or her. You know, we can condition ourselves to do about anything. I mean, talk to a shift worker. I saw one literally today who got up every day at 1 o'clock and started baking donuts. That's what he does. And during his sleep study, he woke up for about 15 minutes at 1 o'clock. Now he went right back to sleep. But as soon as he woke up, the tech said, is this donut time? And he said, it sure is. And he rolled over and went back to sleep. So basically, you want to make sure you control your hygiene, control your environment, control your schedule. So it's a set schedule. You're up at 7 o'clock every morning exercising. You don't sleep in. Don't sleep in on the weekends. You're not taking naps or falling asleep watching TV shows at night. If all those things are controlled and you're still feeling like your sleep quality is light, or you're not satisfied with the quality of your sleep, it might be time to take a more aggressive step. Come talk to us.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Laura. Thank you for calling.
Next, we're going to Stanton. Kay, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Dr. Chris Winter, please.
Yeah, I'm calling in reference to my daughter. She has, ever since she was a little girl, had this thing where she would roll to put herself to sleep, roll side to side, and she has periods of time during the night when she does that, roll side to side. And it really can be quite, not just a gentle roll, but really going back and forth. And I just have wondered whether that's a time during the night that she's kind of coming out of sleep and is, I don't know, using that to put herself back to sleep. She doesn't really seem to be aware that she's doing that. And so I wonder about the quality of her sleep. But then again, she really does not complain during the day of particularly being tired,
sure,
other than kind of typical teenage behavior that you can sleep till 12 on Saturday.
I think you just answered my question, Kay. How old is she?
18.
Okay.
And then the other thing about that, she does have attention deficit, and I believe I have read in the past that quality of sleep can affect that. So I was just kind of wondering what that was and if it maybe had any connection or was nothing.
Sure. Before I answer your question, I meant to mention this to Laura before she got off. This Thursday from 6:30 to 8 o'clock at Martha Jefferson Hospital, we have a lecture series about sleep that we do once every 2 months, so 6 times a year. And the topic coming up is things to help you sleep better. So it's really all about cutting-edge products, and things that might help an individual sleep better. It's free. It's free to anybody listening. Just call up Martha Jefferson and say you want to come hear Dr. Winter talk about sleep gadgets. So that's what we're talking about this
Thursday. And
that
specifically is Thursday, February 7th.
Thursday, February 7th. That's right.
To keep track of the time continuum for
that's
when
exactly.
This might
that's right. So it's Thursday. Thursday, February 7th, 6:30 to 8. If you're hearing this and it's after that date, there's probably a talk coming up soon that you can come to, but it may not be about the sleep gadgets, which is my favorite topic. But getting back to Kay, this is very interesting what you're talking about. I'm going to take a guess as to what's going on with your daughter. There are some rhythmic movement behaviors. I think you should stop short at calling them disorders because for the most part, what you're describing is probably some sort of self-soothing behavior that's sort of a carryover from when she was a child. And we see these in patients every now and then. They don't come to light very often because for the most part, they don't really cause much. So rolling or head rocking are very common behaviors that individuals will engage in. Rubbing feet together. I have a patient who twirls and pulls at her hair. Thumb sucking we see every now and then. And what's interesting is we typically see it in the sort of early 20s kind of range when these individuals start to develop kind of permanent bed partners. Because generally speaking, just like you said, the individual themselves has no idea that they're doing it. It's not until there's somebody sort of witness to the chaos where it sort of comes up where like, hey, you know, last night you did this weird thing when we were sleeping together where you rocked really violently back and forth before you fell asleep. And at that point, there's usually a visit to my office, and I can see there's always sort of the distressed partner and the sort of clueless patient, like, I don't know what he's talking about, but I thought I'd come here and talk to you about it anyway. So generally speaking, these things are harmless. They can go away over time, although my guess is if she's 18 years old and still does it, it may not. There is linkages between things that disturb sleep quality and ADD, absolutely. I think that we miss the boat on that a lot. So I would say that if the attention deficit disorder is problematic and there's a sort of a sense of let's look to see if there's something going on with their sleep that could be contributing, I think it'd be reasonable for her to see a sleep specialist. If it's the issue of she rocks her head back and forth and she rocks her body back and forth, it's not that big a deal. She doesn't care. We don't care. Then frankly, Dr. Winter doesn't care. So, but it's a very unusual condition, but we do see it every now and then. And my guess is that's what's going on with her. But the ADD sort of gives it a different wrinkle.
Okay. Kay, thank you so very much for your call.
We now have
a couple of lines open for those people who've been trying to get through to us to ask a sleep-related question of Dr. Chris Winter and finding our lines busy. So this would be a good time to get to the phone and dial us at 888-WMRA-TALK. And if you do it fast enough, you probably will get a ring instead of a busy signal this time. On Facebook, we have this from Frank, Chris. Frank saying, does sleep deprivation cause depression? And if it does, do antidepressants create better sleep or just mask the real problem?
That's a good question. I don't think sleep deprivation causes depression. If you actually look at research about sleep deprivation is kind of a good treatment for depression. The only problem with sleep deprivation as a long-term treatment for depression is that it's sleep deprivation. And as we talked about with Jim, we all need to sleep. So, you know, most people have
had... But there actually have been studies where they keep people awake for a long period of time and they find that
depression
improves.
Absolutely. And we all have had the experience of, you know, we've got a big test coming up or something going on and we stay up all night. Most people, and we did studies when we were down at Emory looking at this, we were looking at cerebral or brain blood flow with sleep deprivation. People actually tended to be quite activated and sort of wired when they stayed up all night. Now, it didn't last, but staying up all night was clearly better than having disturbed sleep all night. So if you know, if you're a doctor who's going to be on call with your pager and you know they're going to call you 100 times during the night, it might be better just to stay up than it is to keep going to sleep, waking up, going to sleep, waking up with the pager going off. So I think to answer his question, I don't think sleep deprivation causes depression. However, I think individuals who are depressed often have complaints about their sleep, and one of them is often, I'm not sleeping well, or frankly, I'm not sleeping at all. We see a lot of individuals who are depressed, misperceive their sleep, or at the very least, have poor sleep quality. So there is definitely a relationship in the other direction in terms of if you are somebody who has mood disturbance, my guess is your sleep isn't 100% what you'd like it to be. The effect that antidepressants have on sleep, you know, it really, that's a difficult question to ask. I think there are direct effects of the medication on sleep, and then the sort of indirect effects, meaning that, you know, some antidepressants can increase leg movements during the night, which could affect sleep quality in a negative way. However, if somebody is very depressed and is taking a medication for depression and it's affecting that in a positive way, chances are they'll sleep better. So that's a complex question. But I think that the original question of does sleep deprivation cause depression, I think we could probably say no to that.
Frank, thanks for writing in on our Virginia Insight Facebook page. Now we have calling in from Charlottesville, Roman. You're on the air. Your question or comment for neurologist Chris Winter, please.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. My wife and I have been having a lot of debates recently. We have two
She's
small
right.
children under the age of five.
I'm just kidding.
And the debate has been focused around the effects of auditory stimulus during sleep. When our children don't sleep, my wife has suggested playing music, and she grew up listening to music while she was going to sleep. My father, who was a general practitioner, often warned me of this activity, saying it can cause a dependency and interrupt the sleep cycle. And in fact, my wife cannot go to sleep without either having the TV or the radio on. And I was wondering if you could, you know, help settle this debate for us.
Well, Chris, despite your joke at the beginning of Roman's comments, I later saw you shaking your head at one point and nodding your head vigorously at the other. It sounds like you're going to come down on Roman's side.
I know. This is crazy. I don't think this has ever happened before, certainly not in my own life. But, Roman, I think you're right. I think you're right in a lot of different ways. Number one, I think that at its core, anytime you're doing something, particularly with a child, although, you know, I think you could make the same argument with an adult, where you have to have something in place to sleep, you've got a little bit of a problem. You know, and we all joke about your kids' blankets or the doll baby that, God forbid, you drive 4 hours to the beach and you leave the baby at home and, you know, crisis ensues. I mean, I think that any time an individual says, I can't sleep in a situation without X, there's a little bit of a problem. I think that sleep is, to some degree, a skill, and we need, and we're, you know, we're constantly working on that and cultivating that. So, you know, when it comes to an adult, whatever, but I think when you've got a child who's telling you that, look, I need noise to fall asleep, I need, you know, the TV to be on, I need certain lights on, I need to be rocked to sleep, that is a dangerous pathway that you're driving down, and it eventually leads, in some cases, to adults who say, I have to have the TV on. And now, when that adult acquires a partner, Roman is now, if he wants to be in bed with his wife, is now subject to the fact that, you know, reruns of Cops are playing all night long while he's trying to sleep. And you've got the flickering light and the noise, even if it's quiet. So I'm not a believer in any kind of thing like that during the night. It goes against everything we're talking about in terms of sleep hygiene with the earlier caller. So the second thing is that even though you're not aware of it during the night, and everybody always tells me that they listen to the TV at night, well, I mean, I'm not really listening to it, it's background noise, etc. You are. I mean, your brain is listening to it. And if you don't believe me, you know, hook up some EEGs like we do in a sleep study and have an individual sleeping in the dark and then turn a TV on and look at the way the brain patterns change. We hear what's going on. Is it entering into our consciousness? Are we able to learn French in a week by listening to French tapes at night? No, we're not. But it is affecting our sleep. So again, tenets of sleep hygiene are going to tell you dark environment, quiet environment, cool temperature, comfortable clothes, you know, et cetera. So I think that in terms of it being a negative, there's a lot of different levels that is a negative. And I think the only time you can really make an argument for noise at night is if there's other noises you're trying to drown out. I mean, the only time I've ever used noise to help myself sleep was when I would go camping with my father who would snore. So I would bring my, you know, Walkman or whatever I had, and I would listen to some music and try to drown it out, because it was a lot easier to listen to something like a white noise or music than it was this very staccato, scary sound of my father stopping breathing during the night, or snoring loudly. So I got to side with Roman on this one.
Roman, thank you so very much for asking.
But your wife's right about everything else, in case she's listening. I'm a big fan of her.
Roman, thanks for calling in. Neurologist and sleep medicine specialist Chris Winter, our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We've got lots of busy signals right now, but in a couple of minutes we'll have some lines open at 888-WMRA. Talk next to Penn Laird. Sandra, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. I and several women that I know, it seems to be something prevalent in women, fall asleep the minute we get into a car. And this is a real disability when it comes to driving long distances. I actually, for a period of time, was unable to drive from Harrisonburg to Stanton without pulling over about halfway to take a nap, which would last 10 to 20 minutes. And then I would wake up and proceed. But, it really is a serious problem in terms of safe driving and long distance driving. What is causing this? And I don't complain about sleep problems.
Sandra, that's a great question. Number one, what I would say is this. It's not just women. I think that is a very common complaint we hear in our clinic. You know, sleepiness while driving is at the top of the pyramid as far as I'm concerned. You know, if somebody's telling me that they're having difficulty staying awake when they drive, that is a problem that needs to be dealt with. And there's a lot of roads around here in Virginia that are just traps for that. I mean, I think any interstate is difficult. 64 going east to Richmond is one of the most boring drives ever. So we get a lot of people who've had difficulty staying awake during that trip too, and coming over the mountain is very scary. So what I would say is this, I don't know why that's happening to you. The first question in anybody who's sleepy is, are you getting enough sleep? If the answer is yes, you know, I go to bed at a reasonable time and get up at more than a reasonable time, then it really starts to point a finger at, is there something wrong with the quality of your sleep? And really, those are the only two things that make an individual sleepy, not getting enough sleep or something being wrong with your sleep. So as individuals get older, men and women alike, certain things can start to affect the quality of your sleep. So if you're having difficulty staying awake in doctor's offices, if you're having difficulty staying awake to watch television at night, you know, on and on driving, then I think this is a somewhat of an urgent matter. You should talk to your primary care doctor about it and say, look, you know, I'm having to pull over on a relatively short drive because I cannot stay awake to operate my car. So rule number one is maybe you shouldn't be driving until you get this taken care of. As much as I hate to tell people that, but you know, it's all about your safety and the safety of others around you. And so if you're having difficulty maintaining wakefulness during this task that should keep you awake, you really should talk to somebody. And like I said, we'd be happy to help you, but talk to your primary care doctor first. And please be very careful, Sandra, when you're driving. We don't want you to get hurt.
Thank you so much for your call. We've got 30 seconds, Chris Winter, before we're going to hit the break. So I wonder if you got a quick tip for us on dealing with a different kind of travel challenge, jet lag.
Quick tip, I would say that when you get up to travel, don't eat. And when you get to the airport, don't eat. There's something about fasting that might improve your ability to adapt to the time zone that you're traveling to. So when you arrive in Paris and it's dinner time or breakfast time, whatever the next meal is, start eating then. And a lot of individuals find that their circadian rhythm resets much quicker if they do that. So
we've actually got another question about food on our Facebook page. We'll get to that. And Malcolm's call from Crozet when we continue in just a bit.
Dream. Charms whenever I want you, all I have to do is dream.
One of our associate producers has obviously a thing for dreams this hour, but that was the Everly Brothers bringing up the topic again. So far, no callers have asked us about their dreams, but if you've got a question on that or anything else related to sleep, you're welcome to get through to us when the lines open up again at 888-WMRA-TALK. Right now, all of our lines are busy, but we'll have a line open here in a second. Right after we take this call from Malcolm in Crozet, your question or comment for Dr. Chris Winter, please.
Yes, I have sleep apnea. I had an operation on my nose. I had a tonsillectomy, and I had laser treatment to take it away. But what I still suffer from is restless leg syndrome. Plus, during the night, my wife says my arms are forever going up and down, and she'll say to me, Malcolm, would you stop doing the chicken? you know, and I'm not sure, is there a connection between sleep apnea and restless leg syndrome, or, you know, arms failing all night long, you know?
That's a great question, Malcolm. Thank you for calling in. On the surface, I would say the answer is no. So sleep apnea is basically a condition where your airway collapses during the night. And that's not a good thing. It forces your brain to make a critical decision. Do we continue to sleep and feel great the next day, or do we breathe and live? And fortunately, our brains make the latter decision. So Malcolm described having some surgery done. And so one treatment for sleep apnea is to have an ear, nose, and throat doctor typically go in and either remove your tonsils, reshape your palate. There's some laser surgeries or surgeries where people can put little pieces of plastic in the back of your airway to keep it open. All kinds of interesting, fun things to watch on YouTube videos if you got them. So Malcolm, it sounds to me that the sleep apnea was to some degree a success. Usually it dramatically reduces snoring. But Malcolm's describing now that he's got restless leg syndrome, meaning that he feels irritable or restless in the evening. And many of those individuals will twitch during the night, usually their legs, but it can be arms, particularly in people who've had it for a while. On the surface, there's no real connection between those two things. However, we often see people, once they start using CPAP devices, have reduced numbers of leg kicking during the night. Is that because it reduces leg kicking, or is it because it reduces the awakenings that go along with the breathing problem? You know, usually when somebody wakes up with a breathing problem, a little snort or cough, they tend to move a little bit. So it's really unclear. But my guess is there's not a tremendous connection between the two conditions. And unfortunately, Malcolm, it sounds like you've fallen out of the bad sleep tree and hit two branches on the way down, the sleep apnea branch and the restless leg branch. But fortunately, treating restless legs is a lot less painful than the surgery you probably went through. And usually with a medication or a patch or something, you can make that a whole lot better. So you should talk
Chris,
to your primary doctor about that.
Are most primary care physicians aware of medications that would treat a limb movement during sleep disorder? Because that's sometimes different than restless leg, isn't it? Or do you need to see a specialist for that?
It is. Restless leg, I'm going to clear this up, but it's very easy. Restless leg syndrome, we can diagnose right now over the radio. Basically, do you find that your legs are uncomfortable or irritable? Is it mainly at night? Does it get better when you get up and walk around? Is it worse when you try to rest? If the answer to those questions are, yeah, I've got that. That's restless leg syndrome, period. We've diagnosed you. You can send the bill to my office right there. Boom. Easy. Now, what Malcolm's really describing is something called periodic limb movement disorder, which you can only diagnose really with a sleep study. Although, you know, spouses, observant partners can look and say, wow, you know, I've noticed Malcolm, he kicks his legs about once every 20 seconds or his arms twitch about once every 20 seconds during the night. That's periodic limb movement disorder, and that's a little bit more of a different diagnosis. But the two conditions tend to run together, and often medications that treat one will treat the other. Are primary care doctors aware of this? I think primary care doctors are aware of it. How much attention they pay to it, frankly, how much they believe in it, I think that's really more of the question. That's really what separates doctors now. I think most people have come to the point where they are aware of the condition, but, you know, I still have doctors say that they don't really believe in it.
So Malcolm can ask his primary care physician, and if that doc gives him a hard time on the topic,
give me a call, Malcolm.
He can tell that doc to call.
That's right.
Winter.
That's right.
Thank you so very much for your call. William Christopher Winter is a medical doctor, a neurologist.
God, that was my grandmother
both
there for a minute.
Studies and treats sleep disorders. I love doing that to you because I know nobody ever calls you William anymore.
It was my sister.
He is the founder and president of the Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine Clinic. He also serves as director of the Sleep Medicine Center at Martha Jefferson Hospital in Charlottesville, as well as writes for numerous national publications, including the Huffington Post and Men's Health. So we feel especially fortunate to have him back for a third time in just a little over a year, and we now have a phone line open, and we might be able to fit your call in if you call us right now at 888-WMRA-TALK. But we got to get to these other people who've been holding on, and among those is Andrew in Leesburg. Andrew, your question or comment, please.
Yes. My question is regarding my partner. He has always had a hard time waking up, and he's kind of tried everything, you know, metal alarms, multiple alarms, alarms across the room, but nothing kind of works, and it's really a gamble every day as to whether, you know, he's going to hear the alarm or not. So I guess I have a question about what would you suggest for that? And then also, you know, strangely enough, I find that I will start sleeping through alarms myself, you know, not all the time, but randomly. And I've never had that problem before him. And so I wonder why I would be doing that.
Great question. I've slept through alarms before. God knows if there's any nurses that dealt with me when I was a resident, I would sleep through my pager quite frequently. And I think the reason for that was basically sleep deprivation. In fact, I would not only sleep through the pager, but I would actually take the pager off and stick it in places in my call room and have no recollection of doing that kind of thing. So I eventually started sleeping with my pager literally against my ear, and I'd wear a little stocking cap to kind of hold it there in place, bringing back some memories there. So people can sleep through things. If you're sleepy enough, you can do it. So the first question is, you know, is your partner, are you getting enough sleep? Or are you working two different jobs? That can explain a lot. In terms of things you can do, I'll tell you, as a sleep doctor, that is the hardest thing to treat, is getting somebody up and going in the morning. One thing you might want to look into are, there are alarm clocks that instead of using sound, will use light. I know Northern Light Technologies makes one. So the alarm clock, in addition to using sound, you can actually set it up so that the clock only uses light initially. It basically floods your room with light. So the combination of light, which is very stimulating to our circadian rhythm, and sound might be very helpful to him and to you. It's hard to sleep well when the lights are on. You know, somebody comes in and opens the blinds in your room like Mom used to. You can sleep and kind of rest there, but you're not sleeping particularly heavily. So there are medications that you can take before you go to bed in more extreme cases to help you wake up the next day. So there are things that can be done, but I'll tell you, that's a tough one to treat.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Andrew, thank you for your call. We have several questions here from Peter. We probably won't have time for all of them, but let's get to his first one posted on Facebook, where he says, how much does diet contribute to sleep quality? I've read that low glycemic index foods can greatly help regulate blood sugar during the 8 hours that you're not eating and help with a deeper, more restful sleep. If that's true, what are some foods that should be consumed before bed, and how long before you go to bed should they be consumed?
I actually helped with a book that the publisher of Men's Health magazine is putting out. I think it's due out on February 12th. You can find it on Amazon. It's called What Doctors Eat. And so I was the sleep doctor and got to write a whole section just about things related to your topic that you're bringing up. I think the rule of thumb for sleep is we want to avoid caffeine. That sort of falls under the sleep hygiene, chocolate, sugars, and things of that nature. Are best avoided right before you go to bed. The thing to think about, foods that have a lot of protein in them tend to be wakefulness promoting. So prior to going to bed, eating, you know, a plate of chicken wings or, you know, big steak is probably not a great idea. Those things should be reserved for earlier when you're wanting to be awake. And this is something we deal a lot with the athletes that we deal with, is that, you know, they finish up a game, they're all fired up, they get back to the hotel room, and they order massive amounts of meat. And that's not a great thing to eat before you go to bed. Things that I like before bed, chamomile tea. There's a great tea that they sell at Whole Foods. It's in a glass jar, so it's a, you know, single serving. It's called honey drop tea. It's chamomile tea, and it's got honey in it. The chamomile is very sedating, and honey actually has been shown in some studies to affect a chemical in our brain called orexin. It's sometimes called hypocretin. This is the chemical that's missing in patients who have narcolepsy. When it's missing, people tend to feel sleepy. So this honey has been found to sort of block this chemical in a unique way. So combining chamomile tea and honey in the evening can be very helpful for some people. Nuts, granola, bars of that nature, cereals. I'm a big fan of hazelnuts and almonds. There's some honey cut. Trader Joe's now sells these honey coated almonds. They're like slivered. They're for cooking, but I like to eat them and tell patients to eat them because you really get a good effect from that. So I think there's some truth to what you're saying, but typically what you really want to do is just sort of avoid big meals and big protein at night and caffeine. I think you'll do really well, and give the book a shot and see what you think about that.
Even with the slivered almonds, should you make sure that there's a separation between when you eat them and how long you wait before you go to bed?
I don't know if there's great data about that. I always tell people that you should probably not be eating within the hour or two before you go to bed. In terms of weight loss and things like that, you might even want to stop eating earlier. There's a lot of research coming out now saying that our eating, if we're interested in losing weight, should be sort of graded in terms of biggest meal in the breakfast, smaller at lunch, less at dinner. When we start to go the opposite way and sort of escalate our eating as the day goes on, as I certainly do because of timing of things and travel, we tend to run into more problems. So I would say cut the meal train off sometime between an hour or two before you go to bed.
Amanda in Stanton, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please, for sleep doctor Chris Winter.
Hi, I was just curious to know more about children and their sleep. I noticed my son is under the age of 5, and as he's falling asleep, oftentimes his arms and his legs will twitch a bit, and I notice it until probably about an hour into him getting to sleep. So I'm just curious to know more about that.
Yes, my rule to parents is never watch your children sleep. That's pretty much the theme with that. You know, kids have a lot of jerking and movement during the night. It can be abnormal. There's some people that think that growing pains are actually an early manifestation of restless legs, but there's also a lot of hypnic myoclonus or hypnic jerks or sleep starts. These are, you know, thought to be transitional periods where, as the brain is switching over from being awake to being asleep, there's some little unusual movements that happen during that time. And so if you get on the internet, you're going to see all kinds of things about seizures that happen only at night and whatnot. So I'm going to make a guess that probably what you're seeing is relatively normal. And as he's sort of developing his little sleep demo into his adult sleep, that's some of the things that you're going to see, and they're probably going to get better, and he's not going to have those kinds of things as he gets to be older. The thing to look out for is he struggling with sleep? Is he struggling with being awake during the day? Is his school performance affected? Small growth stature, loud snoring. If those things are kind of going on, he's having enuresis, he's not able to go the night without, you know, wetting the bed at an age you think maybe he should be able to do that. You know, when you start to see those things in combinations with the jerking and the limb movement, then maybe it's probably a good time to talk to your pediatrician about that. My guess is what you're seeing is no different than what anybody sees when they watch their kids sleep, which is frankly horrifying.
Amanda, exactly. Thanks so much for your call. Lisa in Charlottesville, we're just about out of time, but we tried to give you a quick answer if we can for whatever your question is.
Hi there. I'm one of these people you were talking about earlier who used to think that she wasn't sleeping, and I've recently discovered that I'm sleeping, you know, 6 hours without waking up frequently. And
awesome.
Wondering if there was some way to get my experience to sync with what's actually happening so that I feel like I'm sleeping.
That's a great question. You know, I wrote an article in Huffington Post about individuals who felt like they couldn't sleep. I try to write an article about it every 2 weeks. So if anybody's listening and interested, there might be a article on there that could help you with one of your questions if I don't get to you today. And if you're on Huffington and have the chance to become my fan, I would greatly appreciate it. I think on the trajectory I'm on right now, I'll have about 100 fans in the year 2027. So,
but you've only got 30 seconds more right now for Lisa's question.
Oh, but for Lisa. So the way to get your sleep perception to match up with your quality, I think that as time passes and you come to be less anxious about whether or not you're sleeping or not, that could be a big help. If you continue to feel like you know you're sleeping 6 hours, but you don't perceive the fact that you are, the next thing I would look towards are medications. There are some medications and alcohol at night. You know, those things can affect that as well. But like everything else, if you're getting to the point where you don't feel like these things are happening for you, then there may be something intrinsically wrong with your sleep, even though you feel like you are sleeping.
Sleep study,
absolutely.
Our guest has been the founder of the Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine Clinic, as well as director of the Sleep Medicine Center at Martha Jefferson Hospital in Charlottesville, Dr. Chris Winter. Chris, thanks so much. And if somebody wants to know more about a sleep study, they start by asking their family practitioner.
That's exactly right. And go Pittsburgh Pirates. I promise somebody I would say that.
Lisa, thank you so much for your call as well. Virginia Insights executive producers Matt Bingay, associate producers Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jusbay and Inner Rhythm. By the way, bunch of posts on Facebook that we did not get to, but we're going to see if Dr. Winter has time to reply to some of those later on today. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.